This podcast is brought to you by Scrum Gathering Canada. Learn more at scrumgathering.ca.
This is Joshua Karayevsky. You are listening to the Agile Uprising podcast.
Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the Agile Uprising podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Lockard. With me, I have esteemed colleagues, Paul Elia. Say hey, Paul.
Hey, and it's Elia, and it's cool. You guys, you know, you got it. And it wasn't you this time, Jay, but that's cool.
And Ryan busted my stones for saying, how do you get the board member's name wrong? So there you have it.
Yeah, there we go.
I'm just going to point out you've been saying it wrong for 40 years.
That's all. Oh, okay. No, that's cool.
Yeah, and then Jay with the hardest last name to spell in the world, Hersko.
Hello.
So tonight we're actually going to be kicking off a four-show mini-series. We're going to dive into the principles of modern Agile. And if you're not familiar with modern Agile, it's a concept that really rolled out of the company Industrial Logic, spearheaded by Josh Karayevsky. I can get his last
you
name.
You got
right.
It. You nailed it.
Can't get yours, Paul. So Josh was on the show in the past, and he talked about these principles in summary, and we figured it would be a fun experiment to kind of dive in and take each one of these principles and talk about what it means and how we've applied it in our lives and figure out what we can do to maybe stoke a fire in some of our listeners to apply them in their companies. So first, we're going to start with I think a principle that's near and dear to all three of our hearts, which is make people awesome. And when you start, you know, digging into modern Agile and you go to their site, which is completely free. And since Agile Uprising is a big believer in making content free, we tip our hat to our friends over there at Modern Agile, modernagile.org. So in there, when they talk about what does make people awesome mean, it says basically that Steve Jobs used to ask his colleagues, what incredible benefits can we give to the customer? Where can we take the customer? And in modern Agile, what they're looking to do is ask how we can make people in our ecosystem awesome, including people who use, make, buy, sell, fund our products or services. We learn their context and pain points, what holds them back, and what they aspire to achieve. So how can we make those people awesome, right? And I think that's, I mean, when you think about what we try to do in Agile, and when you think about what we try to do in progressive companies, or maybe not even progressive companies, but companies that want to get to better, if we're not starting with the people, then we're building a house of cards. So I think what I want to do is I'll start with Paul, considering I butchered your name, and I did not make that awesome. What does this principle mean to you? I mean, how does it apply to what you've been doing in your career?
Well, you know, I thought about this before the show. I'm like, okay, you know, put a few notes together. Second podcast with you guys actually being on audio, third one being with you guys, and things just evolve in a crazy way. So I actually wrote things down this time in full sentences to see if I could actually stay on course, but I have a feeling it's not going to go that way, but I'll give it a go. I was going to dig back to the 1980s for my first example. So, like, Agile isn't new. It's a label that 17 guys picked in 2001. And many of these guys I'd been following already, thanks to Borders books and, you know, the World Wide Web and its spinning globes and flashing banners and the whole nine. But it was just a label to describe something that was already in motion. Better ways of developing software, right? And the first thing they hit it off with as a value is individuals and interactions over processes and tools. And you know, I know Karayevsky talks about reinventing Agile and how we need to look at the manifesto and look at the things that have happened since then and you know, like talk about more than software. And to use that Phillyism, you know, I love, I don't completely disagree with them, but I prefer to think about going about it more as an amendment, right? And doing this in a way that really gets the world behind the movement. Because, like, we're so fragmented right now. there's all this big money in Agile, and DevOps, which, you know, Ryan, you and I are neck deep in right now. And it's just like the next thing. It's the next logical step. I don't care what we keep calling it, right? It's a lot of the same stuff, right? But then, you know, how do we hold a snowbird part two? And who gets a say in the matter? And how do we align like they did in 2001? How do we dig deep and bring our thought leaders together and really have them put aside their cash machines, right? And lay the foundation for, like Coburn says, Agile 2.0. That's probably a topic for a whole nother podcast, right? I digress. So like my first example is this. I interviewed for a job at a grad school. And the interview asked me, what's the greatest accomplishment that I was most proud of thus far in my career? Something like that. And so up until this point, like I since I was 14, I was writing custom software for the IBM PC, doing stuff DBase, Lotus, BASIC. People were buying these $5,000 machines, didn't know what to do with them. I had figured out how to program by 14, and making $5 an hour under the table was pretty cool. My mom used to drive me around to clients and pick me up on agreed upon schedule. So I didn't have a lot to go on here. This is, you know, I go to college, I go to grad school straight through 6 years of school. And so here I am, haven't graduated from the program yet. And I'm on this interview, and he says, you know, what's your greatest accomplishment to date? So where my head went, I don't have a lot of experience yet. So I was a physics lab teacher during grad school, and I had a student. He's messing around with drugs, kind of not doing well with his grades. And I knew the guy was bright, right? So I approached him about this, and I listened to his story. And I gave him some encouragement to kind of straighten up, hung out with him, sort of did the big brother thing, right? A year later, he sends me a thank you letter. And he told me he got his GED, and he's in chef school, and nobody else was looking out for him but me, and he really appreciated it. So that's what I tell the interviewer. I mean, that's the best thing I got to go on so far in my career. And he says, okay, well, that's all well and good, but, you know, really tell me about something important. So I thought about that for about 3 seconds. And I stood up from my chair and I took off my guest badge and I laid it on his desk. I said, man, you know, thanks for flying me in, but the interview's over. I'll find my own way out. You know, I appreciate it. Good luck filling the position. So, you know, right there in that story, that's an example of both making people awesome, right? Like bringing out the best in this young man, and not such a good example of this awful mess with people, right? That the interviewer didn't quite get its people first.
You know what? I'm going to pause you for a second. I think, first of all, my story is not going to be anywhere near as good as that. But secondly, it was an opportunity for the interviewer, really. Like you expressed an opportunity for that person to take a moment, to take some pause, and to realize that not everything of value is attached to a dollar, right? That there are benefits in the humanistic and the you know, just in the people side. So I don't know that it was a bad example. It all depends on that person.
Well, it's you know, when I'm thinking about what does it mean to me and putting the show notes together, that's the first story that came to mind again. I mean, that was a big deal for me, and I know it made a difference in his life, and who else has he touched since, you know?
Right.
That was over, you know, about 30 years ago.
Right. That's awesome. Jay, I mean, I'm sure you've got a story of equal gravity pulling on heartstrings queued up, but what is when we talk about making people awesome in the world of Jay Hersko, where does your mind go? What does it speak to you about, and kind of how have you applied that in the past?
Well, the first thing I think of is I think of the people I work with. I think of my team members, and I define my team members as if they're on a team with me, if they're my peers, all serving the same manager, same leader. My thing has always been, you need to, when we talk about leadership and you hear the term servant leadership, right, that gets thrown around all over the place, I truly believe that a leader should be judged not on their accomplishments, but on the accomplishments of the people that they have had under their tutelage. So I talked about the one probably impressive thing I've come up with in the 40 years I've been on this planet is the quote of, leaders have followers, great leaders have disciples. And I truly believe that you should judge a leader by how they impact the people that work for them. My last job, I was more of a leadership right role. I had an impressive title and I had 25, 30 people reporting directly to me. And I looked at that as here's my chance to help these people get awesome at what they do. I was one of the few leaders on the floor who actually had development plans for all of their people. Everybody had, what do you want to do next? How are we going to get you there? There's this whole coaching T-Grow model that we used. And how can I help you get to that point? How can I help you do better than what you are doing now? Not to say that they were doing poorly, but help them realize that they could do more. I'm sure we've all come across that stereotype of a developer that's a little introverted, not necessarily imposter syndrome, but that maybe they don't feel as confident as they should based upon their skill. And for me, it was a lot of work to get some of the people to come out of their shell and to realize that, yes, they are. You are better than you think you are. You are actually really impressive. And I've had guys that have worked for me go on to be AVPs in different places. I've had guys who were basically just a project manager go off and start doing scrum mastering stuff. And now they want to get into agile coaching. They're starting to demonstrate the aptitude there. So for me, it's all about making the people who you work with better. And notes that I used that hokey quote last week of a rising tide raises all ships. But if everybody gets better and everybody improves, by extension, the culture in the organization, you improve and you become more successful. And that's where my mind goes. Now, I will admit that there's a giant blind spot there because not once have I talked about our potential customer, right? Not once have I talked about how do I make the customer awesome. And looking at the show notes and thinking about it before coming in here, I realized that I got to take that back to me in my current role and figure out how to put more of the customer lens. The whole, you know, we talk about use, make, buy, sell. I got the make part down pat. It's the use, buy, sell part where I really need to refocus around that.
And I think I'm going to step in there if you don't mind, Jay. And when I was thinking and reflecting, getting ready for the show, I had a couple different areas in my past that came into my head about what I wanted to talk to. And actually the experience I want to draw from actually promotes the stance of the customer and the importance of making them awesome in the context of delivery. But before I get into my story, I love the idea of starting with people. And it's intentional that this is the first of the four shows that we roll out, because without that strong foundation of understanding who your people are, what intrinsic and extrinsic motivators they have that drive them forward, everything else that we do is just jazz hands and wasted efforts. Hat tip to Chris Merman.
Jazz hands, yeah.
So I draw a lot of inspiration from the work that Jürgen Apello has done in the past with Management 3.0. He's also been on the show if you want to look through the archives. I really resonated profoundly with the work of with Simon Sinek and his Leaders Eat Last book, as well as Start With Why. But in Leaders Eat Last, Sinek spoke quite a bit about Bob Chapman and the work that he's done at Barry Waymiller. And Bob subsequently released a book called Everybody Matters, and that's another great book where it just kind of talks through the psychology of safety in the workplace, and it talks through the profound responsibility that we have as leaders in industry, or maybe not even leaders in industry, but just somebody that has influence, right? There is a heavy crown that comes along with being an influencer and an agent of change, and you know, we have to take those things seriously. So I just love digging into that stuff and figuring out how the version of me that wakes up tomorrow can be better than the version of me that was today. And by the way, the version of me today is pretty awesome already. So.
If you don't say so yourself, but
yeah, exactly. So when I was thinking and I was preparing for this show and I was going through different examples, the one thing that really made that I have some pride in that we did with the company I recently left, we took an intentional slowdown during a moment of a pivot point in a transformation journey. And we, just for context, we were working on a learning management system for use in the clinical space, typically in like hospital type settings. And just for, it was used in about just under 50% of the hospitals here in the U.S. And it would keep the nurses and the clinicians certified to be on the floor and practicing medicine as well as advancing their skills, right? So my user base is typically going to be, the direct users would be the nurses and the clinicians in the hospital. But if you extend it a little further, my users are everybody, right? Because either they're patients or they're the family of the patients, they're being given the care. And, you know, when we were going into this moment of change, we really took a second to take a breath and say, what is our heartbeat? What is our mission here? What are we trying to accomplish? And we came up with this is about 4 years ago now. It was myself and some of the leads at the time and a couple of the, it was just a mix of people over a lunch. And we really just started doing a mind map. And the mind map turned into a mission statement. And in there, we talked about why we do what we do. And the reason that we do things is because we're trying to come up with better clinical outcomes for patients in the hospital and non-hospital setting. We didn't talk about unit tests. We didn't talk about agile. We didn't talk about deployments or anything like that. We talked about the reason that we get up every morning and we come in and we get into the heated debates and we sit in the mindless meetings and I have to do yet another dashboard for a project that's not red, yellow, or green. It's just moving forward. The reason we go through all that is because we wanted to make a meaningful impact on our users, and our users are everybody, right? And I think a couple times we would take a moment when we'd get into the stressful situations and we'd pull that up and we'd remind ourselves what we're doing here. And I think while that was an intentional step to, you know, draw a persona around the users and how we're impacting them, I think it was a really strong recruiting tool. I think it was a really strong leveling tool for when we had some struggles in the organization and things of that nature. And it's interesting. Usually you adjust your mission every year when the strategic priorities come down. And that mission statement, as far as I know, sitting here today, still stands. And it's still the first thing you see when you open up the knowledge base for that team. So when I think about making people awesome, I try to think about something that speaks to the heart of why we do what we do and what's going to inspire us to be a little bit better the next day. And for that group, it was definitely that.
That's cool. So I want to throw in, and this is what we do. We're Agile Uprising. I want to throw in a bomb. Like, so we've all shared something, and I think we all, in preparing for the show, we kind of dug in. What was that one that really tugged on our heartstrings, right? I want to ask where you find conflict in putting people first, and I'm going to throw myself out there. Because I've mellowed over the years, but I still have an Italian temper. It's in there. Like, there's this beast in the basement, and sometimes I hear him coming up the stairs, and I lock the door, and I just in time. And sometimes that son of a gun gets out. Mm-hmm. And it's usually like, you know, I'm the oldest child. I'm the big brother. I've had that role multiple times in my life, and not to sob, but divorced parents and you know, mom needs a strong male figure to help raise the kids. So I think that influenced me a lot. So when I see somebody getting run over or the user's not really being paid attention to, or we're having all these stupid political squabbles, I can be a jackass. Like, I can just steamroll over people.
Right.
And I think it comes from a good place, but it doesn't manifest right.
So I think that goes back to your interview story, even, where you said the interview is over. I mean,
oh yeah, maybe. By the way, that was a scared little kid, 30 years ago. The guy that I would have been 15 years later would have punched him in the mouth.
Yeah. So, but here's my point for bringing that back up: making people awesome doesn't mean that we just do, like, we blindly say nice things in situations where where the nice thing doesn't need to be said. And what I mean by that, which is really it's an enigma wrapped in a riddle the way I worded it. Sometimes making people awesome is doing something that may not seem that strong. For example, you know, when I was an intern in college, I was not very well focused on my internship duties, and I was relieved of those duties. And I think, so I was shit canned as an intern. And I think that was making me awesome. I mean, at the time, it didn't feel that way, but it taught me about consequence, and it taught me about what you're accountable and responsible regardless of where you are in your professional career. You're in a professional career, and I think as leads, we probably all just pointed to something that we've done that's good. Sometimes making somebody awesome is giving them the feedback that they need to hear, regardless of how abrasive it can sound at times. I mean, you do it with compassion, you do it with empathy, but being honest is really important. So, you know, I feel, you know, there was one time in the recent years when I had a good number of direct reports, and one of the smartest engineers I ever worked with was getting a little ahead of himself, and I ended up having to put him on a performance plan. And I believe that performance plan was a pivot point in that man's career to actually take him to a level that he probably would have gotten there on his own, but it would have taken much longer. So making them awesome isn't necessarily just doing the nice things, right?
Right.
It's doing the right thing, but doing it in a humane way.
Yeah, I mean, the tough love aspect of it when it comes to parenting, or when it comes to, I mean, you guys have seen my dogs. I'm a pet owner. They get tough love like you would not believe. But it's, I think that's a really...
I think that they are a human owner, Jay.
Yeah. For the listeners' perspective, what is it? Seven German
25-pound German Shepherd.
Yep.
I think they own you.
Yeah, they pretty much do.
It's like Jay was Noah and he was getting ready for the ark, but all the planet had was German Shepherds, so he started to bring in them all in.
Yeah, I got way too many in that regard. But to your point, the tough love part is really important, because people do need to hear, you know, like you said, you do it in a respectful and humane way, but people do need to be told when they make a mistake, because sometimes your best learning experiences are not when you succeed, it's when you fail. And right. Taking the time to step back and see why you failed, and to make the resolve to say, you know what, I'm going to try again, but I'm not going to make that same mistake twice. That's a big part of not only making people awesome, that's just maturity in and of itself, which I still struggle with. But Paul, I wanted to touch on, you talked about the monster in the basement, right? And sometimes you let him out, and you said, I think that's coming from a good place. To me, that's coming from when you get upset because you see that the user's not being thought of, or the employees are not being thought of. That's comes down to misdirected passion, right? Because you have passion for the people, you have passion for excellence, and that's how it's manifesting itself.
Yeah.
Because I think we could all say, there is nothing more frustrating to understand this concept, not even in the context of modern agile, just understanding the concept of making people better. And there are other people that we come across in our careers that don't see that or don't think that way. And it's amazingly frustrating, amazingly, because you don't understand how they can even succeed, not realizing that it's an interconnected network, and we all need to be as best as we can in order to succeed. And how can you, you know, by taking someone else down, how does that, or ignoring somebody, how does that lead to success?
Yeah, there are some triggers, and because I've actually hired a coach to help me in the past over this. One of the triggers I identified, I don't do well with "it's not my job." That's a trigger for me,
yeah,
and I've done.
Yeah.
I'm better with it now. But when people take that, hey, you know, I'm going to go home here in 5 minutes. It's almost 5 o'clock, and that's not my job anyway. Whoa. I really have to work at that, but I'm doing better now. The medication is working.
The medication is scotch?
The medication this evening is Balvenie 21. Yeah.
Nice. That's actually that's a good one there. So I guess, you know, kind of shifting into the what challenge can we lay down? What can we ask our listeners to try to take a minute and reflect on and see if it's something that they can adopt into their as a personal experiment at work? Jay, I'm not sure if I hate to put you on the spot, but is there something that you can think of that we might be able to roll out and say, hey, this is something that I've done in the past and it's been successful for me, or it's something that I want to experiment with in the future. And I think others may be able to run parallel experiments and bring results back to us either through Twitter or the Coalition site.
I definitely think so. And I think you phrased it well. For the next week, right, for the next 7 days after you hear this podcast, make it a personal goal to be in the moment and to make someone that you work with awesome. Make them feel awesome, be it a customer, be it a salesman, be it a coworker, be it a subordinate, be it a boss, right? That's the fun stuff, coaching upwards.
Oh, yeah.
Take it as a personal challenge to try and make someone feel awesome. And it's very subjective, but I hate to use this example because it's completely inappropriate, but the judge who heard Larry Flint's pornography case, when they asked him to describe pornography, he said, "I can't describe it to you, but I know when I see it." Same thing with making people awesome, right? You can't put a bounding box around it, but you're going to know when you see it. And Ryan, I think that's an awesome challenge. When I read the show notes, I already put a couple ideas in my own head about a couple people that I think I can challenge in the right direction to get them to realize that they are much, much more talented than they think they are, and they just need to build on it.
That's great. Paul, is there anything, any different experiments or something, a challenge that you can throw down that might help the listeners evolve their organization a little bit more?
Yeah, so I want to go to now to the user and the customer, because I think it's interesting. Jay and I are both right now and maybe in a similar place where we're really looking out for people in our organization. But if you look at modern Agile and the way they begin to describe making people awesome, it actually does initially come from the user.
Right.
It's an extension of the manifesto's similar, you know, customer collaboration, but taking it beyond that and also taking it beyond the customer eventually to where we've been going in this conversation. But to go back to the customer, there's I'm pragmatic marketing certified, and there's a phrase from that thought leadership, NIHITO, which stands for nothing important happens in the office. And I got to say, this has been a staple of my career, even before I knew that acronym, before I even knew about pragmatic marketing existing. They're about a 30-year-old organization. They've been agile before the word agile, and they still are. I got my best results from actually watching people do things and figuring out how to make technology do it better. Mm-hmm. And there's no substitute for that. And looking at your users, I think we have to remember, especially as you get to the enterprise level, and this is ironic because I'm now in a position of making decisions of software for the enterprise, but I can't talk to every single user that's going to be impacted by this, right? I have to get a sense, I have to sample, and I have to make a decision. But then there's that user that has to live with that decision. And, you know, NIHITO, nothing important happens in the office. Get out, get with your users, watch them use your software.
Yep.
Right? And find out something you're never going to find out sitting back in the office pontificating over what your users need next.
That's great. I mean, we just released the interview with Mary and Tom Poppendick, and in there we were talking about various concepts in Lean, and the one that we did not talk about that was in my notes was going to the Gemba, right? Which is exactly what you're talking about.
Same
there.
Same thing. Yep.
Yeah, you go to where the actual work happens, and I love that approach. And there's a great video on YouTube. It was a TED talk about going to the Gemba and how you can apply that to prescription medicine for the elderly or for those with poor vision, because every prescription bottle looks the same, right? So how do you solve those problems? You actually have to go there and live those problems. And, you know, when you adapt that into the technical world, you're 100% right, Paul. I love that approach, man.
Cool.
Yeah, the best leader I ever worked with, Ryan, sorry not to cut you off, he was a CIO who refused to hide in his office. He was the kind of guy who you'd be sitting in your cube working on something and you'd hear something behind you and you turn around and he's just sitting there on his desk, on your desk saying, "Hey, what's going on, Ryan? What are you working on? So what do you think about such and such?" And he was always walking around. And I thought that's what made him such an efficient leader. Because we all know by walking around, you pick up on things that are not in an email. They're not in a phone call.
You gotta walk the floors, man.
Yeah. You need to be out and about. And there were times where I really think he intimidated some of the other leaders in the organization because he was way more plugged in than they were with what was going on solely by walking to a different floor, getting a cup of coffee at a different machine.
Yeah, that's smart. Yeah, we're gonna have to do a podcast soon, and I know we can get some counterpoints of view from our brothers and sisters on the board or any guests that we might invite on the whole remote working situation. But I gotta say, man, human contact, nothing beats it if you can do it right.
Yeah. Completely agreed. There's no real substitute. You can put any software out there, and I promise you, two people sitting shoulder to shoulder has a great deeper impact.
No, and you know, we're doing this podcast right now and it's great, and I've gotten the chance to meet you guys face to face, which is awesome, and that makes the connection last. But it's like a charge on a battery. I'm not going to be able to go 3-6 months without seeing you again. Yeah. So, right? I got to charge that battery back up.
Don't worry, when we get to the plugs at the end, I'll remind you. We'll see each other soon.
Yeah, that's right.
I think the experiment that I kind of want to bring forward, it's something that I sort of just happened into, and I believe it actually is going to really just tag on to Jay's approach, is I started using this product called Best Self Journal. I talked about it on the Coalition this week or last week, or God, it could have been last month. But really what it is, it's a way for you to structure your thoughts and loosely structure your day so that you're optimizing your time, you're prioritizing your time, but it also has forced reflections and it's got daily praise. And the idea of daily praise to me is, it's profound. It just reminds me that no matter how busy I am, my words have an impact on others. And, it really started resounding with me when I would get random, a random message from leaders in my organization just saying, "Hey, just want to remind you, you're doing a great job. You had some strong wins. There might have been some losses this week, but overall, we're better for having you here this week." And it sounds
That's so good. Sorry, man. That's just hitting home. That's so good.
And it sounds so artificial, but like it's not, right? For somebody that I have profound respect for, to take just that 30 seconds out of their day to write me that note, and how that made me feel for the following hours, and like the text messages I would send to people just like in a much more positive way than I was before I got that, tells me that I can be that guy for somebody else, right?
Yeah.
And that you know, pay it forward mentality, where you get one of those messages and then the next 3 days you send 5 yourself, it really does move the needle. So I would challenge any of the listeners, just, you know, within a working week of listening to this, just if it's Slack, if it's in person, if God forbid it has to be email, just reach out to 3 people in the next 5 days and just tell them something that you appreciate them for, right? And realize that you're probably making that person's day a little bit better, and perhaps you're getting them on a day that they're feeling really low. And that's going to help them. It doesn't have to be somebody at work. It could be a user. It could be someone in the family. It could be somebody in work outside of your general domain. But just take a moment and extend that hand out there and let somebody know that you appreciate them for what they've done and the positive impact they've had on you.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. So with that, we'll bring this one to a quick wrap. As far as upcoming events, Paul, how's the meetup world down in Atlanta? What plugs do you have for your friends in the Scrum user community?
Oh my gosh, I'm a knowledge and whatnot addict. I gotta cut back, but there's so many great meetups in the Atlanta area. If you go to Meetup, and I know it's not the only platform in the world, but it really does its job of bringing people together. So rather than list any specifics, what I tend to do is I tweet these events as they're coming up in Atlanta. I got no damn followers right now because I just started using Twitter, right? Like I'd never understood how 140 characters I could do anything. But just letting people know what's going on on the Agile scene or the Lean or the DevOps scene in Atlanta. That seems like something I could do with Twitter. So I'm starting to do that. And the Agile Coaching Exchange Atlanta is a closed group. So when I did the guest podcast with you guys on Lean and Agile outside of IT, we did it in front of that group. And that's an awesome group. If you're an experienced Agilist of any kind, and you're not asking, what is this thing called Agile? And I hear about Scrum. What's this? It's not that we're being snooty patootie. We're just trying to have a conversation at a higher level. And so there's that. And then there are a bunch of them that are, they're not closed. Ryan, I think you're coming to talk to one of them here in September. And so I won't steal your thunder, but there's Alpharetta Agile Users Group. There's Atlanta Scrum Users Group. Lean Software Atlanta, DevOps Atlanta, Agile Atlanta, and just you know, look for your favorite Agile, Lean, DevOps word in Meetup in the Atlanta area, and there's so many good ones out there.
Hey, Paul, I'm no social media manager, but if you want to increase that zero follower count to a number on the plus side, you really want to mention what your Twitter handle is, especially on a podcast where I'm asking for plugs.
Is that the way it works?
That's what I've heard.
I think... So it's not a great one, but it's Paul_V_Elia, E-L-I-A.
Okay, we'll make sure we get it in the show notes too, so that's an easy click away. Jay, how about yourself? Anything to plug?
Nothing exciting. I've been starting the blog again through the Coalition, so check out some of my work there. I have an interesting one I'm probably going to push out next week with comparing Agile to Yugoslavia. And by that, I mean the balkanization of the capital A Agile and industry. I think that should hopefully poke some people. Other than that, yeah, you can find me all over the Coalition. I have no new albums to, no new music to plug. It's basically my fallback. But yeah, that's it. And you can find me on Twitter. And I'm at Backdoor Agile.
Yep. And... for me, I got a couple events coming up. I've kind of come out of retirement on the speaking front. I think I think I'm down in Atlanta in October. I have something in Little Rock, Arkansas, something in Philly, and may have some things coming in Canada in the near future. But RyanLocker.com, you can check out my events page. I try to keep that current. I'm at AgilePHL on the Twitter, and yeah, Coalition, the blog. I tweet some of the other sites that I am a guest blogger on as well, and picking up my writing as well. So it's starting to get busy again, and I'm really getting excited for it. So, gentlemen, good show. I feel like you both have made me more awesome just by sharing your stories. And honestly,
well, same.
I'm
taking
a little more
your
inspired.
Challenge. Your challenge really hit home. I mean, it's so simple, but it's so powerful. You just think about how you're appreciating someone else, how it makes them awesome the rest of their day, and what could they do, and what could they do, and what could they do. It's pretty powerful.
Yeah. So we are the Agile Uprising. If this is your first time listening to us, please consider subscribing. If you've been a listener for a while and you feel like writing a review, hopefully a positive review of the Agile Uprising podcast. It's really helpful for us. And please consider giving us a follow at Agile Uprising, or checking out the Coalition, coalition.agileuprising.com. So one last time, thank you, gentlemen, and till next time.
Pleasure.
Thank you.
Hey, the place to be next spring is Canada. Our friends up north are throwing a party, a scrum gathering to be exact. Get yourselves to Toronto for March 26th and 27th and enjoy some fun with the exchange rate. Register, sponsor, or submit a session proposal at scrumgathering.ca. The gathering will be in the heart of downtown Toronto. The nearest airports are YTZ and YYZ. Also, a special discount is available to all listeners of our podcast. Use the discount code UPRISING, all lowercase, to get 15% off the regular price of the gathering.